Welcome to the Sober Awakening Podcast, where we empower individuals to cultivate a sober mindset and deepen their intuitive connection to the divine spark within. I'm Tim Lyons, the president, CEO, and founder of Sober Awakening, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to providing inspiration, resources, and community support for sober-minded individuals seeking spiritual growth and purpose. Please note that Sober Awakening does not have a financial relationship with any businesses, products, or services mentioned in this podcast. Any mentions are shared solely because they align with our mission to support your journey towards sobriety, self-discovery, and spiritual fulfillment. Now let's dive in and journey toward a life of clarity, connection, and empowerment together. What is going on, everybody? You are back on the Sober Awakening Podcast. I am the host, the president, CEO, and founder. Again, all self-given titles, but I love them, of Sober Awakening. And I am here with my new friend, John Roki, today. I ran into John on TikTok, actually. He was offering some commentary about Alcoholics Anonymous, some philosophy that I share. And then I got a little bit more into his work. He's been sober for a number of years now. Over a decade is what I got from your TikTok, John. And you have fully embraced sobriety. You offer a lot of different things to people who are in sobriety and they are searching physically, spiritually, and you are into something called somatic healing, as well as a couple other things. We're just going to talk about that here and get to know you a little bit more and what you're bringing to this space and what you might be able to offer people out there who are looking for what you might be providing. How's that?
I love it, dude. I love it. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you for being here. So, John, what part of the world are you in? I think you said New York. Are you in New York City or?
I'm on Long Island, which is about 45 minutes from Midtown Manhattan.
I am familiar with the area. So, but really what I want to get into with you is your sobriety. You are sober now for over a decade. How many years sobriety have you got underneath your belt and where do you stand with that?
Yeah. So, thank you for the intro. I'm going to be celebrating 12 years sober, September 16th from all hard drugs and those kind of dry good substances. And I have a year and a half completely sober from alcohol.
Okay. So this is a little bit different than I usually encounter. You were into the hard drugs.
Yes.
If I'm understanding correctly, but then you kept drinking alcohol up until just recently or a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that a little bit, because usually when people quit, they quit everything.
So this is a very nuanced story, and that's why my story is a little bit different than most, and I'm excited to share a little bit. So
please do.
I'm 41 years old, just celebrated 41 in February. So a majority of my 20s. I was very highly addicted to substances, whatever it was. I started drinking and smoking weed in high school, just like everybody else, 15, 16 years old. What a majority of people don't do in high school is start eating Vicodins and Valiums and sniffing pills and stuff like that. I was a garbage head. So anything that was able to get me out of my body and make me comfortable with being in social situations, anything that quelled the uncomfortability of really just being myself and all the insecurity that I had that I was burying deep inside me, I was going to put into my system. What wound up happening is I graduated high school, was always a honor roll student, a stellar athlete from the outside looking in. I had my shit together. But after high school ended, all of my friends that were going away, getting college scholarships, playing ball elsewhere, and I went to work. The grief that I didn't allow myself to feel at that time from graduating high school and then just being thrust out into the real world seemingly overnight, kind of magnified all the insecurity and the things that I had going on, inside me. There was a lot of fear about what was out there in the unknown. Now, I'm not a kid anymore. You know, like I didn't feel as if I was able to have fun. That was always a big part of myself. Like, I want to have fun. Now I got to go to work. my drug use skyrocketed within the first year and a half of being in the workforce. Now I was making grown up money then. So yeah. I had the funds to be able to do that. And by the time I was 20 years old, I wasn't even 21 yet. By the time I was 20 years old, I got intervention by my family because my cocaine and Xanax habit were just running amok. By 20 years old. Yeah, I was in inpatient rehab for the first time at 20 years old. I came out. I admitted that I had a problem with cocaine. I took it a little too far when me and all my friends were partying on Friday and Saturday nights. I just took the party a little too far. So I recognize that I've never touched cocaine since.
Okay.
So 20 to 21 years, I've never touched cocaine, but I started going to outpatient. Afterwards, it's like an upkeep into my sobriety, getting a little deeper understanding into myself. And I didn't feel as if I was an addict. They're telling me that I can't use any substances for the rest of my life. And I just didn't agree with that. I wasn't even 21. How are you going to tell me that I can't even have a beer on my 21st birthday? I got a little carried away. So as the years progressed, I'll try and like shorten this up a little bit for the sake of time. But as the years progressed, I just felt as if as long as I didn't put cocaine into my system, I'll be able to function normally. And the years went on and I didn't really do any deep diving into myself. I just said, as long as I put the substance down, I'm going to be okay. And I got reintroduced to opiates again. And as soon as the opiates like hit my system after a little time away, it felt different. I felt as if I needed it.
Yeah.
And it went from Vicodins again to Oxycontins, Oxys to Roxy 30s, the blues as everybody calls them now. And then to heroin when my funds couldn't sustain that pill habit. What wound up happening toward the end of my 20s is that I was so far gone. I started getting arrested now for things like the consequences were starting to show up in my life, which I didn't really have before. I've been living paycheck to paycheck for probably 4 years prior to this. And I wound up having a grand mal seizure at 29 years old. Because I was trying to skirt around urine tests for my PO and these different agencies to avoid serious jail time for the amount of weight that I was carrying that I got caught with at the time. And I was in a coma for a week and they gave me a 20% chance of living. And if I did live, they were prepping my family to be in a vegetative state for the rest of my life.
And was the coma a result of the seizure?
You know, the coma was a result of the seizure.
Seized and went into a coma.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So the reason for that, I forget what the name of the term is, but I was drinking so much water and detox shakes in order to make sure that I was going to pass these P tests because from an addict mentality, like I still wanted to get high and have my cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
So I dehydrated myself and diluted the salt and the electrolytes out of my bloodstream to such a severity that it actually short-circuited my brain.
Okay.
And I had a seizure in an outpatient room.
Okay.
So by the grace of God only, a week later, I woke up 2 days later. I walked out of the hospital as if nothing ever happened. I was on a bus to rehab and I swore that that was it for me. Like that was it. I'm never touching drugs again. Like jails, institutions, and death. Those are the only three things I've experienced, all of them. Now, the last step for me is getting buried in a pine box. I did, after I got out, I did everything that I had to do. And I had 2.5 years completely sober. I was in the rooms. I had a sponsor. I was working the steps. And by like 32 years old, I was getting my life back. Monetarily, my relationships were mending. My life was getting good again. I looked good. I felt good. And I just didn't foresee myself being in a church basement for the rest of my life, drinking coffee, telling the same stories for the years of my life. I knew that there was something more. And I left the rooms. And I was out there living my life. I got divorced over my drug use and I wanted to date again. I wanted to put myself out there. I had a little money in my pocket and I started casually drinking. Now, drinking never became a problem for me. I don't know why I was able to do it and other people can't. Yeah. But
you're a rare dog, man.
I'm a rare dog. I have a lot of friends in long-term sobriety that say, listen, like, and they'll vouch for me. They're like, yeah, John, I've been out with you where you could have one beer at dinner and then I won't see you drink for another 8 months. Like, it was just right. something that didn't even pop into my head. I know that I'm a rare case, but that's my story. I don't condone that or recommend that for anybody else. That's not what I do. But up until a year and a half ago, I realized that there was still something missing in my life. And even though I didn't drink often at all anyway, like, I still really considered myself sober for the rarity that it was for me to introduce something in my life. I still considered myself sober until I went back to AA a year and a half ago because I was so desperate for community. Yeah. I need a community in my life. So I felt as if I'm going to AA to get the community aspect, the connection from other people aspect in my life, I should probably play by the rules. And giving up alcohol wasn't even like I'm like, yeah, okay. Prior to going back to AA, I haven't drank in like 5 months anyway. So I'm like, all right, no big deal.
Yeah, it's good. I think if you're going to be at AA, it's good. If you're really going to get the benefit from it, you got to be 100% authentic and honest. And you can't, I mean, people do, you know, they're kind of halfway in and out of sobriety and they come in and out of the rooms and everything. But if you really want to jump in, you got to go full bore to try to get out of it what you're looking for. So kudos to you for that. But it's interesting, and I can relate to that a little bit. So when it comes to anything that gives me a certain type of euphoric feeling or lets me escape, you know, somewhat escape my body, I get addicted to that stuff. I can't put that stuff down. But what you're saying about drinking, I kind of think about like me and nicotine, right? I went through this little phase, as many people do in high school, where my junior year, where we, you know, pick up packs of cigarettes and everything like that while you're drinking and everything. Nicotine never caught on with me. I swear I could have a cigarette, not that I even have desire to right now, but I could have cigarette or two and it doesn't appeal to me whatsoever. But you put a beer in my hand. And even one beer for me, maybe I can do it and put it down. But as soon as you start getting that little bit of a relaxed feeling, that's with me. Yes. It's off to the races.
I hear you.
But I digress a little bit there. So I cut you off. You went back to the rooms of AA about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
You're full on sober. Mm-hmm. You needed community. And that's interesting. I tell people all the time, whatever you do, I think it's just so key that you find community.
Yes.
You know, I was listening to someone on TikTok the other day, a doctor who does a lot of good content. And she's like, the studies show time and again, the number one predictor of long-term sobriety is whether or not these people embrace some sort of community.
Yes.
But
it's so important.
So you went back to AA. And where'd things go from there for you?
I love the rooms. I do. Yeah. And I love the people there. From that seizure, what wound up happening is that I got diagnosed with PTSD, OCD, generalized anxiety disorder. I've self-diagnosed myself with like ADHD. So like there was a lot of mental health things that came about from that seizure. Some were from the seizure, some were there long before, but I never stayed sober enough for those things to actually start bubbling up to the surface. What I recognize now is that I've always had anxiety ever since that I was a kid. It may not be like never had like panic attacks or anything, but how it manifested itself after that seizure was daily, multiple, hardcore scary panic attacks every day, which led me into like a fit of depression, even more isolation, even more loneliness. And I knew that I didn't have drugs and alcohol to lean on as a way to cope anymore. So I did take on different other coping mechanisms. Unhealthy. I was into women a lot. I've slept with hundreds and hundreds of girls. I was using Tinder and all the dating apps as a way to get that need met. So all right.
You're the first person's ever been honest. I have slept with hundreds and hundreds of women. Yeah. And I mean, I applaud you for your honesty. I did have one other guest that was in a 12-year open marriage and part of a swingers community and everything like that. And she was a lot of fun, I mean, to talk to. I've been married for 25 years.
God bless, man.
And I have been honestly 100% faithfully married. Somehow through my addiction and everything, that's just something that it's a core value of mine. I grew up in a home where my mom and dad were together. Not a lot of divorce in my family. So it was just something that was in me. But you weren't going back to chemicals, but you had sexual encounters with hundreds of women. Yeah. See, it's been like my wife for 25 years. I wouldn't even know how to start. You mentioned Tinder, man. I mean, I don't know. If something happened to her, I'd have to read a book on how to get my game back or something, right?
I'll give you some tips.
Okay. Well, I mean, I hope that doesn't happen, but I'm not planning on that. But I mean, I don't even know where I'd start in that arena, but I digress again. So you were into all kinds of things. You were doing the women thing. What else were you kind of leaning on besides
heavy social media scrolling, mindless Zoom scrolling. Really, honestly, anything to get me out of the present moment, because there was so much chaos going on inside my body. It was so uncomfortable and it was so scary and it was so consistent that I looked for escape anywhere that I could. How that really manifested itself was like the women and a lot of sexual stimulation, but any kind of stimulation that I could get from an outside source, I would dump my energy into.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So what have you done? I mean, you got back into AA. You love the rooms. You weren't doing, if I'm understanding correctly, you weren't doing the drugs or the booze. You still were doing too much scrolling, too much womanizing. What kind of has taken shape for you in the last year or so, since year and a half that you got back to AA? Where are you at with all these external stimuli that might not be drugs or alcohol?
Yeah. Well, I even want to backtrack it just a little.
Please do.
A little before that, because I started in 2021. I met a personal development coach through a friend of mine down in Austin, Texas, who was in a stock training group of mine. And I heard this guy speak one time and I'm like, holy shit, man, I really resonate with this dude. And I started reading the books like the Eckhart Tolle's and really wanted to start after COVID. I like really wanted to start finding out truth in the world.
Yes.
Started trying to decipher like the bullshit of what I'm being fed to what really is objectively true out there. And that led me very quickly into wanting to get to my own objective truth, not from the lens that I saw the world behind all of my hurt and my fear and my pain, but what really is underneath there. So I started taking a deep personal development journey. With this coach, he was a mentor. I consider him a friend now. Where that led me was not shortly thereafter, getting introduced to a mentor and colleague of mine, Judith Johnson, who is, a pioneer in somatic experiencing and trauma informed nervous system work. And with those two in tandem, I was able to shed through slicing through layers like with a machete of all of my patterns, all of my protective egoic mechanisms that I've been carrying on, the roles that I play in relationships, the way that I view the world, really just unraveling all of the untrue things that I've been holding as truth, how I see myself, how I see other people, how I am in relationship, how I view the world. All of that started crumbling from, and it was very, very confronting. And also probably the most illuminating thing that I've been able to do in my life. And I've recognized through being in and out of the rooms for 15 years prior is that the rooms didn't go to this level of depth. It didn't go to this level of depth. Now, my mentor, initially in personal development, he was sober. He had, you know, sex addiction and drug addiction, and he had a sponsor, and he went through the steps. And there were a couple of things that he did that I recognize now that he did bring into that personal development program that were from the 12 steps. And I see how some aspects of the steps are amazing, but the main thing that really helped me plow through so many roadblocks in myself was the nervous system and the somatics and going back to the body. I consider myself an intellectual. I've had so many people tell me over the years that I'm too smart for my own good. So what wound up happening is that all of those fracture moments of my past, my parents getting divorced, my first love of my life in high school cheating on me over and over, I just disconnected from my body more and more and more and more as time went on, as more circumstances that were painful started to happen to me in my life, multiple bankruptcies because of addiction and poor choices that I've made, more isolation. So I just stayed living up here instead of being able to completely revolutionize the relationship that I have with my body. And the more that I continued to do that, the more safe that I felt to incorporate new ways of being, to incorporate new belief systems into my life, to make it feel safe enough for me to change the identity that I've created for myself as a perpetual victim of life. I thought everybody was out to get me, that nobody liked me. Every single financial setback or relationship setback, I made it mean that I was a bad person who was inherently not deserving of anything good in my life. But that was just my nervous system's way of protecting me because I didn't know what expansion and love and abundance actually felt like. So I got to rewire that from the root.
Yeah.
And then flip some of my mind frames around to match the level of safety that I had in my nervous system. So going back to your original question is that I'm a human being. I still caught myself, going back to what was familiar, which was chasing the cheap dopamine, getting a couple of matches on a dating app or doom scrolling for a couple of hours because it got me out of my head. This modality it's not like you take a pill and then all of a sudden you're healed. It's not like that. We spiral upwards. Sometimes we fall back into a trough until we hit the next level and around and around and around we go, but we're always trending upward spiral. So I tell clients like that all the time. And when I'm guests on a podcast, I'm a human being first and foremost. I will never claim to have it all figured out. I will never say that I'm fully healed or whatever. I'm just a human who's able to live with the human experience, the full range of emotions without collapsing back into addictive behaviors or patterns or self-sabotage anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it sounds like you have done a lot of work shedding your ego.
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much. You mentioned Eckhart Tolle. What kind of things besides him along that arena or along that path have you been interested in?
An overwhelming majority of books that I have on my bookshelves behind here are personal development based and mental health based. Anxiety was a huge part of my life for a long time. So I picked up a lot of nervous system books from authors like Mastin Kipp or Bessel van der Kolk, who wrote The Body Keeps the Score. This other guy, Dr. Russell Kennedy, who wrote Anxiety RX. Different ways of speaking that really resonated with me and put into context what anxiety really was for me. Mm-hmm. And all of that really was a common denominator that I found was there was this wounded inner child who didn't get his needs met from the time that he was a kid.
Yeah.
The roles that I had to take on in order to keep peace in my life, in order for me to show up and feel significant? How do I get love from other people? How do I feel like I'm belonging as a part of a tribe, in my family unit, whatever? And, you know, the recognition that I use so many of those things in order to, like, quell that, silence that little inner critic of mine who always told me that I wasn't good enough and I wasn't deserving.
Yeah. It's funny. You've mentioned a couple times about the body and the nervous system now and trauma. And I am hearing time and time again, it's not a new concept to me, and I don't know if it is to my viewers or listeners or not, but there's a lot of talk about within a lot of these type of circles about how discomfort in the nervous system, in the body, is stored trauma. And, you know, we have to learn how to release that. And yes. Once we release that stored trauma, some stuff that we don't consciously always remember that is even there. You talk about the inner child. The inner child has not, has gone away, but subconsciously those memories are there and they're stored in the body.
Yes.
And, you know, they manifest in tons of different ways, but sometimes it's pain or anxiety, whatever it might be. And I find that with addicts, we have a lot of us come from traumatic backgrounds. Myself, I was a chubby kid when I was 10, and I didn't have a lot of friends, and I just went through a really awkward time. And then somehow I had a couple friends in the neighborhood who used to like to play sports. And so I'd go out and I'd try to play with them. I wasn't very good, but I was a chubby kid and I was a little bigger. So I learned that, you know what, when we played football, I was really hard to tackle. And so I got it in my head that hey, that football stuff, there's some chubby people that play that. Maybe I can do that. I learned I was pretty good at blocking and tackling. And so that kind of changed me. So I took up football in high school, but then I still had that need for acceptance. So I broke into the athletic circle, but I still took up drinking because it made me, it kind of helped me be cooler, and I was more comfortable talking to girls, and I wasn't as socially awkward, and I was more accepted. And then that's where it all kind of started with me. But I had a very wounded inner child. I went through a period in junior high years that was very, very tough. Now, looking back, you say, oh, that's just kid stuff. But I mean, there was like a year of a lot of crying myself to sleep and being chased home on my bike from, you know, some of the other kids in class who were actually pretty good guys. I just, you know, it's that kid stuff, but it still hurt, you know, until I started learning that I had to punch some people in the nose and stuff like that. But all that stuff, right? You know, but it's all still in there. And we drink and we do things to kind of offset our trauma. And to this day, I still have things that, you know, manifest that I try to let go of. And I think God, addict or not, I think a lot of people can benefit from knowing that you do have things that are stored in your body. And if you are having discomfort or anxiety, it might not be something that you necessarily need to take a pill for or continue to see, you know, your psychiatrist. Now, I'm not saying throw the baby out with the bathwater. We are not medical professionals here. I'm not telling anybody to stop with their therapist, but there may be some things that can be done to shift gears a little bit. And is that what you get into with your somatic healing practices?
100%. And I'm really glad you touched on that, because that is a staple.
Go ahead.
That's a staple of like one of my core beliefs around the healing umbrella that we're in the 21st century, where, you know, we're conditioned to believe that, you know, that piece that you're looking for is on the other. Just take a pill.
Yeah.
Just take a pill. Doctors aren't, I'm going to assert that doctors as a whole aren't, like your family doctor isn't too well versed in body energetics, trauma stored by the nervous system work at all. So you walk into a doctor's office and say, doc, I got this crippling anxiety. I don't know what to do with. Oh, well, just write your prescription for Xanax and then you call it a day. Right. That happened to me. I walked into my family medicine doctor about a year after almost dying from a drug overdose, which he knew about. I told him that these panic attacks and this anxiety, and he wanted to write me a prescription for Xanax. I'm like, Doc, in what planet do you live on? Do you think that that's a good idea for somebody who's in recovery right now? And he didn't have an answer outside of the prescription pad. He didn't have one for me. So what I did was, I'm like, oh, okay, well, this is something that I know that I can't take a pill for. That's going to obviously set me back. And I didn't really know about therapy or anything like that. That didn't even really cross my mind. So I white knuckled life for 6 or 7 years until I found these other people who thought differently than I did, who taught me something that I didn't have the privilege of finding out yet. So all of that stuff, it's stored inside the nervous system. Everything is energy. I tell people everything is energy. An emotion carries an energetic charge, and without being able to not only release that but complete the loop of the thing that you're holding on to. So you said you were a chubby kid when you were younger. I was a super skinny kid, Tim. Super skinny. I graduated high school. I'm 5'11 now. I graduated high school. I was 5'11, but I have 55 pounds more muscle now at 41. I graduated high school. I was 135 pounds. My arms were the size of my pinky. When I was a kid, it was the same way. So I used to get teased by my family. I used to get teased by kids. My ears stuck out like, you know, like Dumbo. So I get made fun of all the time.
Yeah.
Some people are more equipped biologically to handle certain levels of like ridicule and judgment and objectivity, I guess. What I just kind of found out like 2 years ago that I had to accept for myself is that I'm a hypersensitive human being. I'm super sensitive. I pick up on people's energies. I'm an empath. I'm an intuitive. So those kind of things, like when that like hit my body, it hit my body like a Mack truck. I couldn't just like just let it roll off your shoulders, but I didn't have the capability of doing that.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to, you mentioned something I want to touch on briefly and then talk about your different healing modalities that you've discovered and you practice. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you are an empath and an intuitive. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that means to you, but I noticed I tell people this wild story about how when I was in high school, I had this spontaneous out-of-body experience. Mm-hmm. Whether you believe in that stuff or not, it happened to me. You can look it up. It literally happens. I felt a vibration in my heart chakra area in the chest, and I was taking a nap, had sleep paralysis, and boom, I was out of my body. And so it happened twice, and I have never been able to reproduce it, but I've always kind of had these 1 foot in, 1 foot out of some otherworldly experiences pop up. And then when I got into my alcoholism and I was deep in the addiction between probably 20 and almost 40, when I quit, it kind of all went away. And then when I got sober, and after I was sober for a few years, I started having these intuitive things start to come back online. Mm-hmm. And I have a friend who had a near-death experience. She was on a podcast, my third podcast guest. She had a near-death experience and came out of it. And she's a full-blown intuitive / psychic now. And she runs courses and teaches all that stuff. So I enrolled in her courses and for about 2 years did this pretty intensive intuitive work where you start doing meditation and they guide you through certain things and a lot of energetic clearing. And then the last 9 months, I got into it with a group of people, mostly females in this space, due to probably the sensitivity of it, where we sat in circle and we did readings for each other. And it was pretty cool, you know?
Is it?
But yeah, I don't know. When you said intuitive, what is that? You say you're an intuitive. What does that mean to you?
It's hard for me to put like one concrete, definitive answer out there for you. Yeah. I feel as if my intuitive skills were built up over years as a coping strategy and a defense mechanism for myself. Right. So I learned how to read the room as soon as I walked in. What are people's facial expressions like when they look at me? Social engagement system and all like the facial muscles. I'm able to read people's, I'm able to like profile people almost in order for me to protect myself. I was that hypervigilant for so long in order for me to protect my own well-being. Now that I'm kind of like on the other side of that, my intuitive skill set now is being able to identify with people's pain.
Okay.
I could see things kind of like happening before they happening in the sense of like energy and where somebody's coming from. Mm-hmm. And that makes me much more effective with people than I have been in the past, because now I kind of like relate it back to myself and I see where people are coming from even before they even see it for themselves. That's why I'm a coach now. That's why I do these kind of things with somatics, because I've learned through my own life experience how to kind of harness that and channel that from a defensive mechanism to an actual helpful wanting to be of service in the world kind of thing. And that's where my gifts are starting to actually grow a bit now.
Yeah. And I imagine you pick up on cues and being empathic as well. That probably comes first. You know, you can pick up on the visual clues, like when you read a room, but you can kind of feel people's energy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's funny how much that happens, because there is an otherworldly sixth sense. We are spirits having a physical experience, right? Mm-hmm. There is something else to this. And when we take that alcohol or those substances away from a lot of us, we find that we really wake up to these type of things. Right. In a variety of ways, for different people, but it's pretty cool. I mean, it really is a phenomenon that I see time and again. I see all kinds of people who experience some sort of spiritual awakening once they have a solid foundation of sobriety underneath them. That's what sober awakening is all about. It's not really to get people off the street, but it's like you're in that void and, you know, what else is out there? How do we start to discover what your purpose might be? How do we help you find a spiritual direction that works for you? Yes. So with your healing, and pain recognition and things like that, you've gotten into this. Where do you start with all that? Like, what was your journey? How did you start with this whole somatic healing thing? What do you do?
Yeah. So when I started getting into the deep personal development work, it was a lot of very confronting things from like a mindset standpoint. So, you know, beliefs, identities, patterns, stories that we tell ourselves, about ourselves, about the world, things that we've been holding on to as truth for so long. When I first started doing that, I was so dysregulated in my body. And I was so desperate for some kind of magic fix for the chaos that was going on in my life. So the guy who I was working with, my mentor at the time, like he was a former Marine, like 2 or 3 time Iraq War veteran. Like the guy was a very militant, like straight to the point, high accountability kind of approach. And that, as much of a blessing as that was, I realized that it was activating my nervous system even more. I felt like I was always on defense, like the things that were coming up, the recognition that I had for all of my truths that I thought were truths that weren't really truths. I was going into defense mode and making myself wrong about it because my nervous system just wasn't safe enough to go there. Going into the somatics part, though, it was actually being able to create a sense of safety in all of the uncomfortable, disgusting feelings that I was suppressing for 30 years. I was able to go there and sit in it and actually name those things. And as a byproduct of being more comfortable in the uncomfort, all those subconscious memories, those old energetic loops that were still yet closed, I was able to do the thing. I was able to close the loop in real time. So for an example, the reason why that work is so powerful is that I was carrying a lot of suppress rage within me. I used to get bullied as a kid as a byproduct of my parents getting divorced. I was very angry about that, and I didn't know how to express my anger toward that situation. When I went back to school, my first school year after my parents getting divorced, I was getting into fights all the time. Yeah. That was my way of closing that energetic loop. That was my way of feeling through those emotions unhealthily, right? I didn't know any other way. So when I was told, we don't fight, you don't do that, that's bad, that's wrong, that's disrespectful, that's scary, all of those things, I learned to just shut down. Okay, well, the only way that I knew how to move through that rage is by fighting people. Like you said, sometimes you just got to punch somebody in the mouth. Yep. But that was my first line of defense, was to get violent with people.
Yeah.
And you took that away from me. So how do I move through that? How do I feel through anger in a healthy way? I wasn't modeled that. I wasn't taught that. I was 10 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, in our society, we're told all these emotions that we have to suppress that just need to come out. And what I have learned on the healing journey and in the spiritual work and everything, it's you cannot escape your emotion. It's energy, like you mentioned earlier. It's energetic. Mm-hmm. You have to let the energy flow through you. Yep. You have to sit in the feeling. Oh. You got to feel it.
Yeah.
You got to face it and feel it and let it move on, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes you may have to feel whatever you're feeling for a while before it goes away.
Well, that's the thing. It's getting comfortable in allowing those things to come up, right? But you got to feel it to heal it. I'm sure you've heard that 1,000 times. And you know, through the somatic aspect of it, you know, that level of healing can be very deep. And there's a subset of that modality that I've done with my mentor on a couple of retreats that's called point holding. And there's a bunch of it kind of taps into like Chinese medicine and medicine, where, you know, chakras and pressure points and stuff like that. There are multiple points on the body, whether it's in the feet, in the gut, in the heart, on the back of the head, that when held and applied pressure to, it kind of allows the body to access those unfelt, unconscious emotions and memories that come up, like while you're on a massage table.
Yeah.
And what happens for me is that I had so much unprocessed shit that there were times where I was on that table that I was literally convulsing uncontrollably, shaking, my body shaking, tears streaming down my eyes. I was able to go back to the original imprint, how painful it felt. And that shaking, the convulsing, that was what was going on in my past that I haven't been able to move through. I just stuffed that down. But in that instant, my body was closing the loop because it was allowing itself to do what it wanted to do when I was a kid or when I was a teenager, and being properly guided through that process. It's like, okay, well, if I had so much anger toward whoever, my boss, my dad, my ex-girlfriends, whatever, but all of that energy was still stuck inside me, given an environment in order for me to go back there and then play those scenarios out again, kick, scream, throw a temper tantrum, start pounding pillows and screaming at the top of my lungs, I was able to biologically like close that loop.
Okay.
And I feel like time and time, sometimes I still have to go back there for myself. I have the tools now where I'm able to go back there for myself, but most people don't have that. They swallow it. There's decades worth of pain that they haven't allowed themselves to feel through in a healthy way. That's where drugs and alcohol come in, because it's a suppressant. That's how they feel like they need to cope.
Right. Right. I have a guy I had on who's a yogi, and he is all about healing the chakra system by getting into your body.
Mm-hmm.
And being aware of your body. He says on the spiritual path, so many people, they try to meditate and try to get out of their body and escape the reality. He said that's not right. You've got to get into and be aware of your body.
Yes.
In order to start, you know, where does it feel tight when you're in meditation? Where, you know, and start working on those areas that you sense. don't try to get out of the body. Be aware of the body.
Yes.
And then let everything else take over after that.
Exactly.
That's what he said. You know, with spiritual, sometimes the spiritual path people, it's great, but you might have it a little backwards, you know?
Right.
You got to come back inside the body to start healing some of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned things that sounded kind of like acupressure and, you know, pressure points and things like that. You found that very helpful. Is that like, how do you start getting into that type of stuff? I mean,
that's a very niche area.
Yeah.
To get into, like I said, my mentor who I was introduced to while I was on this personal development journey, a pioneer in somatic experiencing. She was best friends with like Peter Levine, who they call like the godfather of body-based healing work. You know, she's an old woman now. She's in her 80s, but she's helped like tens of thousands of people over the course of her career. You know, it's becoming more and more mainstream mm-hmm. now. So there are different practitioners and different levels of this work. You know, my mentor, Judith Johnson, you know, her program is called Psychoneuroenergetics, which she incorporated over 50 years of her own wisdom and trial and error and stuff like that to bring this program out into the world, which I'm now a certified facilitator in.
Okay.
You know, I never had to search that out for myself. It was kind of just like put in my lap. I'm guessing by divine circumstance, but, yeah. You know, it's a fun rabbit hole for people to just dive down. There's so much literature, there's so many like peer reviewed studies, so many people who are now talking about this. I mean, just look on Instagram a little bit and there are people out there. Your algorithm will kind of tailor make and bring more people who are talking about these things to you without mm-hmm. you actually having to go out and find anything. And I think curiosity, number one, is paramount, right? I think there's a lot of people who, if they're going to sit and listen to this podcast and hear us talk about this stuff, they're going to find some resonance and something's going to land for them and be like, oh, wow, I've been searching for all of these things and trying to read all the books in order to solve my problems, but you can't think your way out of a feeling problem. I feel right. like addiction in and of itself is a way for us to like think or rationalize our way and do in order to like solve this feeling problem that we've had internally for so long.
Yeah.
And we got it ass backwards. You need to feel it all first and then come up. The bottom-up approach instead of the ever-popular top-down. Like,
yeah.
Mental health, is it really mental health? Anxiety, yes, at some points does live in the mind. But it's a body-based feeling problem before it's anything else.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So somebody like you, what you said you're a certified coach or not coach, you're a certified practitioner, healer. What do you bring to your client base? What kind of clients do you have and what do you do with them?
Yeah, great question, dude. Sorry if I skirted that around.
No, that's okay.
That last question was meant to get to this answer, but over my own course of trial and error, what I know that worked for me in the first place is now what I try to bring to clients, which is a combination of somatics, getting into the body, being able to guide people back into the safety of themselves mm-hmm. Through like meditation, all these different tools and frameworks that the psychoneuroenergetics have given me. So without any of that safety is number one that I bring to clients. So we learn how to establish safety back into the nervous system, to be mm-hmm. able to sit through meditation and all these other different kind of things, give different tools or like short-term regulation tools, how to activate and stimulate the vagus nerve to bring the parasympathetic nervous system back online, take us out of fight or flight, take us out of the stress response to bring us back into the here and now in a safe and present moment. Then after that's established, and again, everybody's different. It could be somebody who's either newly in recovery or has been sober for a long time, or even just like normal people out every day. They know something is missing in their life. They know that there's levels to their life that they haven't been yet able to access, and there are roadblocks that are preventing them from getting there. More often than not, that is just dysregulation in the nervous system. So that safety, that sense of groundedness again in the body is paramount for anything else. And then I blend like the nervous system stuff, the personal development stuff, where we, now that we have this safety in our nervous system, we're able to go deeper and start to challenge our beliefs, start to challenge our identities, start to challenge the scripts and the rackets that we've been playing over the course of our life in order to give us that sense of safety to begin with. So again, like when I first started out in the personal development world, it was all like top down recognition, awareness, all of that. But all of that felt so threatening to a nervous system who's held on to identities and roles and beliefs about myself and the world that kept me safe. So my nervous system is always going to want to pull me back into the familiar hell, but because that's what kept me alive for so long. Literally, it's a survival response at like the deepest core of our biology. So it's a creating safety first, and then going back and kind of slowly challenging people to like go deeper and being a little more confronting with unraveling and depatterning us from all the beliefs and the identities and the stories that we've constructed throughout our whole life. And that combo, I feel personally, is that it's not, you know, it needs to be worked in tandem for people to actually make sustained embodied change in their life.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. My yogi friend, again, he talks about, you know, getting into the body, but he talks about people want to try to heal from the top down. And he's talking about it from the chakra system. He said everybody tries to heal from the top down. He's like, no, you got to start from the bottom up with the root chakra, which is representative of safety. Then into your second chakra, which is your pleasure center. How well are you managing, you know, your pleasure and your creativity? And then the third chakra, which is all about the story we tell ourselves. Who are we in this world? Are we this, that? Are we trying to keep up with the Joneses? What are we, you know, you got to heal that stuff. And he will tell you that most of the time people will spend lifetime or lifetimes, if you believe in that type of thing, just in their first three chakras. But everybody wants to jump to the upper stuff, the mental aspect of it all. Yeah. And we really go about it backwards. There's no way of doing it. You can't do it without doing it from the ground up.
Exactly. And the reason why the top down approach is so intriguing to so many people is because I'm sure you could attest, how good does it feel to get this aha, like mental breakthrough moment?
Oh, it's awesome. It really is.
Incredible. Your dopamine receptors are firing on all cylinders, dude. Like we keep, you know, that becomes an addiction in and of itself, Tim. I know so many people in the new age spirituality space, plant medicine people, ayahuasca, we're going to go do these mushroom journeys and sit in a jungle for a week and do all those things. And they become addicted to the breakthrough.
Yeah, because that is all cool and everything like that. And you can have those experiences sporadically, but we are here in these bodies for divine reasons. We wanted to come be in these bodies. So we're really wasting our time if we're spending all this energy and resource and time trying to escape our bodies.
Yes.
And we become addicted to that. Eventually, we've got to come back to the here and now. And we have to be in this world. We have to. It's what we came to do. We didn't come to sit here. Not that meditate. I love meditating. I meditate 20 to 30 minutes every day. It's my routine. But we didn't come here just to sit on a rock and meditate. We came here to participate, you know?
No, of course. And meditation and all those things, I'm not knocking the plant medicine. There's so
many. Of course not. Yeah.
Aspects of it, you know? But again, I speak from life experience where I was outsourcing my entire life to the next breakthrough. I want the next aha moment. I want the next revelation and the next damn wall to be broken down. And I started, I started chasing those kind of things instead of what the actual work is, yes, you can meditate for 30 minutes a day. I do the same thing. Mm-hmm. But the work is, when I get activated, when I get triggered, how am I reacting differently? When I'm put in a position where a new relationship comes into my life, a new circumstances pops up into my life, how am I reacting differently? Mm-hmm. Not from all of my unneediness, unlovability, unworthiness type self, because I've been able to sit with all of that enough to see where it comes from. And then I get to make a choice to react differently to life. The more I get to react and choose to react differently to life, the more safety I bring into my nervous system, the more self-trust that I build with myself, the more confidence that I have that I could, life can't throw anything at me that is going to break me anymore.
That it's you actually, you are in control.
You have control.
You can't always control what happens to you, but you can control how you feel about it and how you respond.
And that's
No, and that is where I've developed this philosophy where, you know, a lot of these things we experience in our life is divinely planned, but it's what we learn through these things and how we react to them that is our quote-unquote free will. It's about the choice we make in our reaction to everything.
And, you know, I really want to add on to that is that, you know, you know, it's said that 95% of the life we live is through our unconscious. So only 5% of the way that we show up is like through our own conscious free will. An overwhelming majority of people's reactions out there, myself too included, I'm not discluded in that, is from an unconscious state. So until you make the unconscious conscious, it will run your life and you will call it fate. This is just the way that my life is. Mm-hmm. This is just like how things are. And Dr. Gabor Mate describes trauma as not necessarily what happened to you, but your reaction to what happened to you. It's a story that you made about it, how you felt. What was your reaction to that? And everybody has a different nervous system. Everybody has a different way of thinking. Some of us, I would like to assert again, is that an overwhelming majority of people in the recovery space who were addicts, alcoholics, are hypersensitive to things that most people, some people wouldn't even like pay attention to.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, that's right in line with so many of the things a lot of my guests have been talking about lately, from the healing perspective. So we're coming up on an hour here. And what I'd like to kind of ask you in conclusion is, okay, so what type of people do you serve? You know, who typically seeks you out? And what can you do for them? And, you know, how to get in touch with you or where they should start if they, you know, are interested in what you have to offer.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Tim. You know, I don't have like an archetypal niche client. It could be anybody who's in early recovery, sustained recovery, who recognize that the rooms and whatever kind of program that they're running just isn't enough. Anybody who's wanting to get a deeper knowledge into self, they recognize that there's patterns at play there. They keep on attracting the same partners in their life who may be toxic. Their financial situations may not be where they want it to be. They recognize that they self-sabotage a lot.
Okay.
And those are just all unconscious patterns that we've been running for so long as a way to keep us safe at the end of the day. And, you know, I'm open to having conversations with anybody about everything, because one of the blessings and the curses of being able to say that I have literally run through the gamut of any kind of almost unimaginable trauma, aside from like a sexual assault or something like that in my life, that I can relate to almost anybody's situation and what they're going through. And be able to help them reframe these things, create safety within themselves, and then go about repatterning their mentals around it. You found me on TikTok. I do have my TikTok and Instagram is the same handle, at JohnRokee21, R-O-K-E-E. I have a website up that you could book Calendly calls through. We'll have a half an hour discovery call and see if you and I would be a good fit to work together. But anything that I do starts with, it's accountability. We're not outsourcing our power and giving away our power to things outside of ourselves anymore. We're not saying that we have a disease. We're not saying, oh, well, the alcohol ruined my life, or my dad ruined my life when he walked out, or the you know, the government's handcuffing me, and all this kind of fear-based bullshit. We're cutting through the noise, and we're taking accountability and responsibility for our actions. And we get to choose after a while to show up and change our way of being. And it is the most empowering. Like, I speak so vehemently with so much conviction behind this, because right now in this society, I feel as if we've outsourced all our power to everything outside of ourselves. And this is a reclamation of getting all of that back for us. Like it says in the Bible, Jesus was talking about it. The kingdom of God is within you.
Right.
And we're getting back to that divine power that is inherently in our birthright to claim for ourselves. And I love being able to help and guide people back into claiming that for themselves again.
Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking about that whole kingdom of God being within you just the other day, and it's kind of dawned on me. The kingdom of God encompasses everything. It encompasses heaven and hell. And that heaven or hell could be within your own body and how you're holding things. You could be experiencing the bliss and the joy and everything that we look for. But so many of us are in those repeating patterns and things like that. We're in our hell because of what's going on here. Everything starts and ends with what is within you.
Yes.
You know,
amen. I couldn't have said it any better myself. Yep.
Yeah. So, so you mentioned how to find you, right? Yep. About, yeah. And, yeah. Is there anything that you would like to leave with the audience in closing before we kind of wrap up here? Or as we wrap up here?
Yeah. You know, how do I put this? There is a life beyond your wildest dreams.
Yeah.
There really is. And sometimes it takes sludging through the mud on your hands and knees through barbed wire traps in order to get to the other side to discover it. But don't quit before the miracle. I know I'm taking that from AA directly, but it's so pertinent in life to not quit before the miracle, and don't give up. And you're going to access deeper levels of your character through this journey of yours. And when you come out on the other side, you're going to thank your lucky stars that you have been gifted the opportunity to go there for yourself. So give yourself a chance. Don't quit before the miracle. And life really is beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is. Well, thank you for what you're bringing to the world, John. It's so great to see a guy kind of in this space. If you look at my podcast guests, I'm thinking today, I'm like, God, thank God I got a guy. I haven't had a guy on in several months. Because a lot of people in this type of space, it tends to be more female, probably.
Yeah.
Due to the sensitivity or the quote unquote divine feminine or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that's really cool. And I love your authenticity, your openness, and it's just really great and refreshing to see everything you're bringing. And I just love that TikTok that I saw from you. Like, we've got to stop, I think, in AA and do whatever works for everybody, but you don't necessarily have to label yourself as broken. There's one old timer in my AA group, and I love him to death, but he'll consistently say, well, I just got to remember, I'm just another bozo on the bus. And No, I can't. I'm not. No. Nobody's just anything. You're not broken. You're unique. You're special. You're amazing. You just got to learn to see it. Don't rob the power from yourself.
Exactly.
So anyway, all right, well, that is it. Thank you for being with us, John. I very much appreciate it. And we'll be looking forward to see what you continue to bring to the world. And keep rocking, man.
Thank you so much, Tim. It was a pleasure, bro. God bless.
All right. Thank you for being here. We'll see you. Bye now. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Sober Awakening Podcast. We are so grateful and excited that you're part of this journey. As always, please remember, any businesses, services, or individuals mentioned here are shared because they resonate with our mission. We receive no financial benefit from promoting them. It's all about guiding you toward what inspires and empowers your journey. If you've found value in this podcast, please consider supporting our mission with a tax-deductible donation at www.soberawakening.org. Every contribution helps us continue providing resources and inspiration for those seeking sobriety and spiritual fulfillment. Don't forget to subscribe, share this episode, and visit us at soberawakening.org for more resources and upcoming events. Let's continue this path together toward a life of sobriety and spiritual fulfillment. We love you so much. Until next time, stay sober-minded and intuitively guided.